Good morning, Saints.
Believe me, I'm more scared than you are. This has got to be the most frightening obedience to which I have ever been required, and I have had some hairy requirements over the years. Well, we sometimes joke, we're living in community on a farm in northern Minnesota where the Lord brought us 25 years ago, making clear that we're to establish a place of refuge for Jews in flight from persecution in the United States of America. How's that for an opening line? And it's been a searing experience to be in community with God's people. I'm a Jewish believer, a former Marxist, atheist, left-wing, radical history teacher who came to a place of disillusionment 35 years ago with a failed marriage with a German wife whom I had met in the service there. And it set me on the road to salvation. I put a pack on my back and went back to where I was as a high school dropout at the age of 16, where I didn't leave school because I was not interested in knowledge and truth, but because I was. Can you understand that? And truth was only a truth. School was only a place in which careers were obtained for split-level success. I had no appetite or interest in that. And not only were the answers not forthcoming, but the questions were never asked that are real questions. So I was a high school dropout at the age of 16, a merchant seaman, subsequently became a Marxist, left-wing radical, embraced what they call Marxism as a worldview, until I came to a time of disillusionment. I've gone through a succession of gods with a small g. And in my final disillusionment, I was then a high school history teacher, graduate of the University of California at Berkeley. I took a year's leave of absence from the teaching profession, put the pack on my back again, and set forth once more to somehow find truth, that I would leave no stone unturned through Western Europe, of which we Jews are essentially the architects of the modern world. We've given the world its basic contour with Karl Marx, Sigmund Freud, Albert Einstein, Steven Spielberg. It's amazing. If you but knew the Jews who influence your thinking, your mode of life. And I wasn't looking for God. I didn't know there was a God to be found. I was looking for philosophical, ideological truth. But in the course of it, God was looking for me. I had one of my students, a little Gentile girl with a snub nose and freckles, who her mother said to me, my daughter used to come home from school, she said, weeping over you, knowing that you were an atheist and a radical. And since that day, she said, both my daughter and I have been praying for you. And the Lord nudged me in the ribs and said, she's the one whose prayers have entered you into the kingdom of heaven. So I'm grateful for snub-nosed, freckle-faced Gentiles. Haven't always been, but especially when they're the key to your salvation and can pray fervently because they're righteous. And God hears that prayer, pursued me as the hound of heaven for 14 months throughout Europe. I kept a journal in those days, which subsequently became my first book, out of print in English, but I can get it for you in Russian, French, German, Hebrew, Swedish, Finnish. It's called Ben Israel. That means Son of Israel, Odyssey of a Modern Jew. It's a remarkable existential saga of a modern man, that's what we Jews are, in search and apprehended by the God whom I was not seeking. Well, life was too earnest after being saved to go back to anything less than the continuing pursuit of truth. And it wasn't long, maybe 3, 4, 5 years into my new faith, having traversed evangelical, fundamental Christianity, charismatic, full gospel movements, to realize that something was still grievously missing, that we could not be to the Jews what we ought until we were somehow back into the vitality, texture, quality that characterized the church at the first in an apostolic way, that somehow the issue was lifestyle, and that we had to find our way back to community. And that's how the Lord brought us to our place for 25 years in community in northern Minnesota, 40 below zero winters, 9 months out of the year. And that intensifies every question. So I often joke and say that there's an invisible saying over the entry to our property. You know, to the concentration camps, it was Arbeit macht frei. Work makes free. Of course, they weren't coming to be free, but to be released by death after exhaustion or extermination. Over our property, I would have said, all you who enter here, abandon hope of retaining any kind of fleshly self-esteem or any kind of mirage or any kind of illusion, because you're going to be ruthlessly dealt with. Not because anyone has that as their intention, but it's the very nature of community, the intensification of all of the issues of life that become brutal. I've been accused in that place of being an enemy of the gospel by my own people after sacrificially pouring myself out that they might have a place to come of that kind. So someone said you have to give a little introduction or description of yourself that people might know where you're coming from. I jokingly said, maybe it's not too much of a joke, at the Sunday school hour, you can see why the church desperately needs Jewish believers. You guys left to yourselves is a formula for deception and disaster. You bring a wonderful balance to our intensity, but without our intensity and insane jealousy, you would go the way of all flesh and not even know it. So God intended a body in which these remarkable elements, Jewish and Gentile, would kind of counterbalance one another and be sane and right and true and real. So you're going to get a little taste of what you're missing, and maybe you'll say, thank God that it's only a periodic visit, that we don't have someone of this kind continually in our midst. You know what it says of these prophets that lay in the street for 3.5 days before they're resurrected? These are they who torment those who dwell on the face of the earth. We're tormentors. Well, some of my books are out there. They're probably already all gone in the few that were left to be made available. But I want you to know their existence. And I've asked one of the ladies in the congregation to put a sheet out there that you can request them by filling out your name and address, giving the money for the book and for the mailing. We'll mail it to you. Because it's exceptional literature. Reality is my second book, four principal essays or themes of an inspirational kind. The message on Elijah is worth the price of the book alone. And that's in several languages, French and, Russian and so on. A more recent single message, Apostolic Conversion, was given in California, where I was to speak for 4 days, and after the second day, I despaired. I could not go on. I cried out to God. I said, Lord, these people ostensibly have it all together. This is a groovy, swinging, charismatic fellowship, but why then do I feel like I'm up against a brick wall? I can't go any further. The word is coming back into my teeth. It's as if these people have silently covenanted to go this far, but no further. Of course, we were living in a home of, I don't know how many thousands of square feet. Many of the people were wealthy and contractors and cars and double and triple garages with boats that must have had something to do with the fact that they could say this far, no further. And so we spent the day in fasting and in prayer. The Lord gave this word that night. This is the actual verbatim transcript of that spoken message. When you read it, you'll marvel. You would have thought that this was months in preparation. It is articulate. It is ordered. There's a divine logic as it flows out from page to page, just spontaneously on the spot. But when they heard this word, down they went. Alan spoke about going down twice in his life. This was one of those going downs. Probably one of the fraudulent things about our Christianity is both the frequency and the shallowness of our altar calls. There are times when I almost want to call a moratorium and say that's a no-no. If we're not going to be changed by our coming forward, if we're going to return to our seats in the condition in which we left them, better remain where you are. And we can't play with God. So these people went down, and when they got up, I knew that they were changed. And that change has remained through these years. The pastor's preaching changed. The third the church left, they were plunged immediately into a financial crisis. So you know that something happened. And that this little booklet now is in Danish and in Dutch and in French and in German. No, not German yet. Russian, It deserves to go around the world. It will. You must get this. And then the most recent book, The Holocaust, Where Was God? How many of us have asked the question? I can't believe that a phenomenon of this kind has taken place in modern times, and especially that it has taken place in modern times, and that we should somehow sweep it under the carpet, that we should not wrestle with the ponderous questions that the systematic annihilation of 6 billion Jews creates for modern men throughout the world. Maybe it's so painful, maybe we're so fearful of what the answer might be if we leaped into the grave with these bones that we avoid it. You know that the world has a wonderful talent to sweep things under the rug and that for history to lose its cogency? I shared this morning how if you went to the concentration camp Dachau today, where I went in 1952, where the original barracks stood with the stink of death and whipping posts, places of torture, and the gold fillings from teeth that were kept in the hair and the ovens with the bones and the ashes in, you would have one impression. But if you went there today, it's all nicely tidied up. It's all nicely landscaped. They've removed all of the stink of death and put up one barrack according to specifications. That's the German mind. So there's something in man that is escapist. We don't have a stomach for hard things and for truth. And that's pitiful for mankind at large. It'll lead to a life not rightly lived and to an eternity that will be shameful to consider. But for the church to be evasive, for the church to be escapist, for the church to have no stomach for truth, for the church to be a kind of a get-by phenomenon that goes on from Sunday to Sunday with predictable services, that is inexcusable. All the more in the last days. I have to assume that we're closer to the end than we know if what was given me from 1:30 this morning till 4:30 was the Lord. I'm willing to run the possibility that it's my flesh and pay the price for it, because you know that we men who stand before God's people are under a double obligation. This is no small thing. We're not little professionals doing our cute thing and grabbing the honorarium and running. We have an obligation before God in what we bring to God's people, in what we think He has put into our hearts to share. So I've shared that already because I've written out 4 pages, unusual for me, with Alan. And if he did not witness that, I was ready to call it quits then. But he has encouraged me, so I'm going to go on. The final book and the subject of today is the subject of truth. It's much more than just a mechanical thing or just an approximation of things that are externally true or even doctrinally true. The truth to which God calls the church is the spirit of truth, the intangible, indefinable essence of something through and through, not just its external ramifications. It's the whole truth, and I recommend this to you. So you can order any or all of these books on the sheet back there. They're all $7 each, except the slim one for $3, and throw in a little something more for the mailing, and as soon as I get back, it'll be sent out, and you'll be blessed for the having of them.